John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And joining us is Sean Salisbury as we get ready for now the ramping up period in the NFL as far as practice today. You could start to put the helmets on, no contact until Monday, and so kind of a good time. And so what type of things are you expecting as we get ready for the padded practices?
Well, John, it's going to have to be urgent because this is, and anybody you talk to, and whether it's from guys like Seth Joyner, who played linebacker, who I spoke to this week, to Flozell Adams, a bunch of former players and current players, and you've watched it forever, John. The football's tough enough when you can't hit. And we don't, if you go to a, and you do, but for people out there who don't, if you go to an NFL practice and training camp nowadays and compare it to just 10 years ago, it will boggle your mind about the lack of, you know, hitting, and that goes on. And I know we got to save legs, but you can't just turn it on and off like a light switch, the physicality of it. So I would expect him in a very short period of time, John, and you got to preserve legs and make sure people are healthy, but to get as much protected hitting as you can without bringing people to the ground. You got to be smart because it's hard to simulate. You cannot do 7-on-7 or just thuds and touch each other barely in pads. And I know we're in a pandemic, and then all of a sudden think you're going to play great football in September. I would expect them to use it to their fullest and get the most out of it. More live blitz pickup drills and those things where you don't hit the quarterback or bring guys down, but you got to simulate live moving and the rest of it because you don't get a chance. And once the season gets rolling, you don't hit each other very much in practice, but a few minutes a day, you thud. So they're going to take this time, and they need to.
No doubt about it. Hey, let's get into four downs.
All right, a little bit of a broad question here to start you guys off. With all the postponements by college football going on, how will this all impact the 2021 NFL draft?
Well, first off, I don't think there's any way in hell, not one shot, that they may tell us that they're having football in the spring. It's either fall or nothing. And the Pac-12 and Big Ten have already elected not to play. They're not playing spring football. They're not, because it'll be too much to get in. And we always talk about the safety of the kid. At least that's what the NCAA and these conferences tell us, that during this COVID, they've got the health and wellness, mental, physical, emotional health and wellness of the kid in mind. Okay, so what about head injuries coming in? So you're going to tell me we're going to play 20 to 30 games. The national champion, LSU, played 15 games last year. So it's going to affect recruiting, the health of the kid, pushing the 2021 season. It's going to make that a little bit different. And then your off season and how much time you can spend with the kids and good time off for coaches. And then you still got to go recruit for the following season and underclassmen. We're not having spring football. We're just not, at least in the Power 5 conference. It's either the fall or I'll see you in the fall of 2021. It affects it too much. So if you have their health and well-being in mind, you can't play 24 to 28 games in a calendar year. Not happening. If they don't play it in the fall, they're not playing it until next fall.
So, yeah, I tend to think that even though the ACC and the SEC and now coming along there, the Pac-12 or the Big 12, you know, they're going to still 2 weeks from now. It wouldn't surprise me if they say we got to shut it down. I mean, you got to shut it down into next year. I know they're going to try, but of course, you know, are they going to be able to keep things going, particularly the fact that, you know, the SEC and ACC are in some of the bad states in the country for tests. And, you know, it's getting worse right now, like in Georgia. And even now I'm sure it's going to start in Florida because now they're almost mandating, you know, people going to school and not just college, but in the high schools and junior highs, and they're all getting sick. I mean, what, there's almost 1,000. So it still looks as though they're going to try, but it still wouldn't surprise me if it doesn't go. But, I mean, really, I think that there pretty much wasn't any choice for the Big 12 or the Big 10 and the Pac-12.
With Quentin Dunbar looking like he'll actually play in 2020, where does the Seahawks secondary of Dunbar, Shaquille Griffin, Quandre Diggs, and Jamal Adams rank among the others in the NFL?
You know, it's so hard to tell. When you add Jamal Adams, how they use him in the secondary, this is a team that has been in the past, a team that lines up, plays a handful of coverages and tackles. And they've just always done it. They've been so good and so well taught. And the Seahawks have been able, and in the past, they've had great players, but also have had good players that play better because of scheme. But adding a guy like Jamal Adams to the mix and what they've done, this is a good secondary. The question is, how will you use it and how will you use a guy like Jamal Adams? Because I believe he needs to be closer to the line of scrimmage. You need to get him involved in blitzes because he can go get the quarterback. So what are we going to see more from? Are we going to see him hover and be a box-type safety and a guy who pressures and move him around? Are you going to stick him back in too deep away from the line of scrimmage and not allow him to be involved? The more you get that great football player involved, the better off you'll be. So where they rank obviously depends on scheme and health. But going into it on paper, it's a good secondary. And Jamal Adams makes it a possible really, really good one. It's all going to depend on where you use their best secondary player, and that's him. And what kind of scheme are you willing to change to suit his talents? And the rest will fall into place.
Yeah, I'd have to say top three right now because look at the accomplishments. I mean, Jamal Adams, best safety in football, three-time Pro Bowler. Then you've got Quandre Diggs, two-time Pro Bowl alternate. Shaquille Griffin was a Pro Bowl alternate who went to the Pro Bowl last year. And now Quentin Dunbar comes in as, you know, at least Pro Football Focus's number two coverage tight cornerback. So you throw all that together, then you have three, you know, you have Trey Flowers, who has two starting years as a backup now. You have, as likely backup. Then you have, you know, a second-round pick in Marquise Blair and Ugo Amadi, who can come in there and play slot. That's pretty talented. It's deep. It's good. I think it's top three.
Best thing they've had since they were the Legion of Boom, John. No doubt.
All right. With the premiere of Hard Knocks last night, which featured team will have the better 2020 season, the Chargers or the Rams?
And I'll come clean on this. Other than clips I may run for my show once in a while, and John, you may find this fascinating. I have never... And I don't wear it as a badge of honor. I'll watch Yellowstone and Ozarks and shows. I've never watched a full hour of Hard Knocks since it's come on the air. I never have. So somebody will tell me something. I'll say, oh, I got to go see that, or I got to see what Sean McVay said or what Anthony Lynn said. I'll do that. But I've never watched it. So, but as far as who's going to have the better season, I think the Rams are, you know, they were a game out of it. If we'd have extended the playoffs last year, them and the Steelers, I believe, John, would have made the playoffs in each respective conference. So I think they're due for a bounce back, and a lot of it depends on the quarterback. And when I say bounce back, to play better. The Chargers, I think, are going to take a little bit of a step back. You know Phillip Rivers, you're trying to find out. Tyrod Taylor's serviceable and very good, but he doesn't take a lot of chances. You lose a Hall of Fame-type quarterback. The running back's not there. The question is, and they always seem to have injuries that slow them down. They are a gifted team, and then the key is, from last year, a bad offensive line, how quickly can they gel? I like the Rams better, although it's a more difficult, deeper division is the NFC West, because you got the Kansas City Chiefs as the top team, but the Raiders, the Broncos should be better, and the Chargers will hover. But I think the Rams are the better football team, and I think a lot of that has to do with offensive line and losing the quarterback, even though Tyrod Taylor can be good. He's not Phillip Rivers. I think the Rams are primed for a better season. I don't think either team is a Super Bowl candidate.
No, I go the different way. I think it's going to be the Chargers, because what I look at from the Rams, in the course of the last 2 years, you know, they have lost 11 starters on defense and a nickel cornerback, three offensive starting linemen, and they had to trade Brandon Cooks, and they let Todd Gurley go. And what did they add this year? Now, remember, they haven't had a first-round pick in about 4 or 5 years. You know, they added Leonard Floyd and Alshon Robinson, and guess what? Robinson now has a illness that could knock him out for the first part of the year. So not adding anything. They're going to be worse on defense. They don't have Wade Phillips. I think right now I'd go with the Chargers, who I think's had a good offseason.
All right, last question here, guys. With the NFL making it easier for teams to bring in free agents for workouts, will Jadeveon Clowney finally find a new team? And if so, who do you think it'll be?
You know, every time I think it's going to be like the Seahawks or the Cleveland Browns or the Tennessee Titans, something else happens. I really don't know. I'd like to say, honestly, if I had one, because every team we pick, it may end up being a team that really we're not talking much about. Maybe you got him penciled, John, for some team, but he's gonna land somewhere, and he probably, after all this, since his value went down, the longer he waits, all it takes is for depth on a team to suffer, or a star player to miss a couple weeks. He may have ended up playing, if he outplayed his hand by asking for too much money, But now in the end, by waiting, John, he's not going to get the money he wants, but he may get a better situation and still get paid because he's now in a situation where he can kind of wait it out. He's going to land somewhere, and he will impact somebody. But we look at sack numbers. That's how guys get paid, and he's never had a double-digit sack season. He's going to land somewhere. If he was wise, he'd pick a team that has a chance to win, that's going to pay him somewhere and go out and have a good season on a good defense, because if he wants to get paid down the road, he'll sign a one-year contract. But I'm not sure where it's going to be, John. And looking at all this, every time I picked a team, it's ended up going somewhere else. Maybe you have insight of where he's going to end up.
Well, I think it's still going to be either Seattle, which I think they've cooled on the idea because he has a certain number and even increased that number in the last week. And you know, Tennessee's the other team, but I still question whether it's going to work. But I think right now his interest is waiting till the beginning of the regular season, you know, the last week, maybe August 30th, and coming in, because I don't think he wants to come in and go through the padded practices and do all those different things. Knowing, so I'd say right now he's still maybe a month away, or I guess 3 weeks away from making a decision, but it's going to be a much lower price. But your price is always high, Sean. Thank you for joining us here on Four Downs, and I'm looking forward to talking to you on Friday.
Look forward to it. Thanks so much. Good to be with you guys.
Okay, that's Sean Salisbury, and you can listen to the show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by the Dubin Law Group. Coming up next, we get the report card. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the report card with the professor.
And the report card we get out each every day, we look at the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, the stupid. We look at the stories, the anecdotes. We take the social media comments. We also take the voices and we attach a grade. Curtis Rogers on vacation right now, and so DJ Wilder filling in and giving us the report card.
All right, awesome. Well, first, John, I wanted to ask you, what grade do you give the Bills signing Sean McDermott.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's an NBA player. Sean McDermott to an extension with the Bills.
Oh, I think it's well deserved. I have to give it an A because Sean's come in there. He changed the culture. Brandon Bean got him the talent. You know, this is a team that went, you know, as long as the Mariners have, even in fact without going to the playoffs. And now the combination of the two has worked out. So no, I give him an excellent grade, an A. He gets a 6-year deal. He has great job security. And he's got a team right now waiting to see if he can actually pass the New England Patriots.
Yeah, they're really set up for a lot of success this year, I think. I think a lot of it's probably on Josh Allen, don't you think?
Oh,
but
yeah.
I think Josh Allen can be a good quarterback. I don't know if he is right now, but I think he can be. But it's going to be interesting to watch the Bills this season, especially with the Patriots probably going to be on a little bit of a decline. So I'm happy for Sean McDermott.
Yeah, and I think that it's well-deserved. And, of course, if he can actually pass the Patriots this year, and I think there's a decent chance it can happen, boy, is he going to be a star in Buffalo. And, of course, now he's a star because he got a great contract.
Definitely. All right, so first up here, NBA bubble news here. The Phoenix Suns did this really cool thing for their players. So since these players are in the bubble, they're not able to be with their families. And they've been away from them now for almost a month, maybe even longer than that. And the Suns, it was technically a home game for them yesterday. And they had the starting lineups announced by the families of the players that were starting. And I want to play the audio of that for you here, John.
At the center, 6'11", in Arizona, number 22, DeAndre Ayton.
Michael, 6'6", from
Villanova,
number 25, Markel Bridges.
At forward, 6'8", from the University of North Carolina, number 23, Cam Johnson. Go, Cam!
At guard,
6'3", from his pay,
number 11,
Ricky
Romeo!
Toma!
At guard, 6'5", from Kentucky, number 1.
What do you think, John?
It's kind of noisy. I guess I don't know. It's like it's good to see after all this time being away from the family and having to do it. But I'm going to give it a C. I mean, it just sounds bad. But I guess, you know, good for the family. So I'll go right down the middle. But I'm going to give it a C.
I have to give, I see where you come from, like the music might have been too loud, but I have to give an A just because I think the NBA has been really knocking it out of the park with the bubble so far. Mm-hmm. I know whenever I filled in last, like 3 weeks ago, I know you and I were kind of, we're like, what is this food situation down here, you know, and everything. But I think they've really knocked it out of the park with these games and everything. I think it's really cool that the Suns were able to at least get the families involved in some way, because they haven't been with any of their families in like over a month. And I know that today they announced that they could have some family members come to the bubble now in time for the playoffs, but I just think it's really cool since they've been apart for so long.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think just allowing the families in, that's an A without question, because they've sacrificed, the families have sacrificed, and I think it's great they're able to do it. But I think that maybe they should stay away from, you know, announcing the players. Just have a regular announcer.
All right. Oh, excuse me. All right, John, next up here, it's something we've been talking about really the whole show. I just want to get a grade on it from you. Just the Big 12 kind of moving forward with continuing with a conference-only football season in the fall. The SEC's waiting, and right now they're thinking about September 26th. The ACC is planning on a football season if it's not in the fall or in the spring. But the general plan seems to be in the spring of 2021, and then they'd still play season in the fall of 2021. And I just want to get your grade on just, I guess, the plan. I don't even know if you can call it a plan, but I don't know. I just want to get your grade on how the NCAA plans on kind of playing two football seasons in the same calendar year.
Well, the NCAA is clueless. I mean, they get an F because they've shown no leadership. They basically, you know, have let chaos happen to a point now where you have all these splits, you know, with two of the Power Five conferences not playing this year, the questions about next year, the questions about, you know, who's going to play and who's not. I give them an F. I guess I kind of give a C right now to the power schools that are going to try to play. But I worry, I still think a couple weeks from now, there's still that off chance that they may have to, you know, reverse themselves and not do it. I just think it's taken on a lot. I think that, you know, you can say in the NFL, there's a bubble. And I think that there is, in the sense that particularly now you got Dallas, New Orleans, pretty much all staying in hotels as long as they possibly can and totally controlling things. I don't know if you can control things enough in college, particularly in the bad states. So I'm going to give it a C.
Do you think the NFL would change the date of the draft if they played a spring football season?
Doubt it. I think right now the plan is that, I was looking through a mock draft and for three rounds, right? And again, mock drafts are all over the place. But right now you've got, 27, 28 guys will be in the top, that aren't going to be, they're not going to have a season. You know, like, for example, I know 12 first rounders that aren't going to be able to get new grades. And so you're going off maybe 1 year situations that they've had. You know, two of the top three quarterbacks are only going to have 1 year of experience. So I'd say right now that they keep the draft as it is.
Crazy times, John. Okay, one more story here before we close the grade book on the report card here. Damian Lillard last night dropped 61 points. Now, this was two nights after he dropped 51 points. So 112 combined points for him the last two games. And this is after LA Clippers forward Paul George and guard Patrick Beverley were talking trash to him just because he missed a couple free throws at the end of a game. And right now it's kind of sparked what Damian Lillard has been doing these past two games. And I just want to play you this audio here of really just how it explains his mentality, and I want to get your grade on his performance after all this trash talk.
It ain't nothing I want more. Ain't nothing I want more. I told you when I first came here, I said, I ain't come here to waste my time. I came here, they gave us a chance to get in like we asked for, and that's what we're here to do. Job still ain't done, but I said, you know what I'm here for. We trying to get in. Our work ain't done yet, but we fighting for it.
John, how do you grade his response to all the slander from opposing players?
Hey, I give him an A, and the reason I give him an A is because, sure, he may be trash-talking and he may be, you know, bragging and all those different things, but he's letting the actions speak more than the words, and the actions are just incredible. You know, 112 points in two games, I mean, that's just remarkable. So, no, I'm going to give him an excellent grade. I'm going to give him an A.
I'm biased towards Damian Lillard, so I give him an A as well, just letting his game speak. I know he had some, as Danny would say, some spicy language after the game last night, putting some respect on his name. But I love his response to all the trash talk, especially from two players that he's knocked out two separate times in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, it's great stuff. So you got to respect what he's done on the court. And again, he can talk as much as he wants, but he's letting the action speak. Be sure to check out the professor's notes on 710sports.com. The professor's notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife. Coming up next, we are taking your text questions on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It is time to go on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line at 710-710 to take your text questions. And so, DJ, what do we have?
First up, John, from the 425, is Clowney to New England a possibility?
No. Understand. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, there's two lines of thinking is that Bill Belichick is not one that likes to pay big money for a pass rushing defensive end, even though he wants to pass rush. You know, he's more interested in the cornerbacks and guys in the secondary. And Seattle has maybe a little bit of a similar philosophy with Pete Carroll, particularly with him being an old defensive back coach. You know, because right now the price would exceed anything they want to do. Remember, they didn't pay Trey Flowers. You know, they didn't want to pay, you know, Chandler Jones. And so as far as Clowney, no fit.
From the 425, Professor, what type of season do you think Mike Evans is going to have?
I think a great one because, you know, you've got Tom Brady, who was star for quality pass catching help last year, you know, throwing only 60% completions. Now you've got three tight ends. You've got Chris Godwin. I mean, you've got McCoy there to be able to help out Ronald Jones in the backfield. I think that offense is pretty well loaded. Sure, there's questions on the offensive line, but I think he's going to put up big, big numbers.
From the 9331, John, would you rather have Josh Gordon or Snacks Harrison or Everson Griffin?
As much as I'm a big fan of Josh Gordon, they need the defensive lineman, the run stopper in Damon Harrison or Everson Griffin more than I think Josh Gordon. But again, the good part is you can get both. You can't get all three, but I'd say right now, you know, they can get by because they've got a top five, top six offense right now. Or at least a top 10 offense, but they want to just secure things more on the defense. And so getting one of those defensive linemen, I think, would help more.
Mike Daniels just signed with the Bengals yesterday, didn't he?
He did, yeah. In fact, because everybody's been asking me, what numbers do you think Griffin could get and maybe Snacks Harrison? And I kept on saying $3 million or less. Guess what Daniels signed for? One-year deal, $2.7 million.
Well,
going
off of that from 425, how much would Clay Matthews cost on a 1-year deal?
Yeah, I honestly think it could be maybe 2.5, you know, because, you know, the one thing that he has coming to him is $2 million that, you know, was guaranteed on his base salary. So he's already got $2 million. I don't think he'd come for the minimum, but I think for $2 million, maybe $2.5 million, he would do something.
From the 253, Professor, how much do you think we'll see John Ursua this season?
Hard to tell. I mean, you know, if Josh Gordon comes here, then it's really going to be hard for Ursua to get on the field because then you have, you know, the good outside threats, you know, because DK Metcalf's there. You'd like to be able to do it, but see, the problem facing Ursua is that he's a slot receiver. And, you know, Tyler Lockett is one of the best slot receivers in football. So then, I mean, do you put Lockett at flanker or do you put Gordon at flanker? What do you do there? So I think it's still going to be tough for him to get on the field. I feel bad for, you know, the 2019 class because it's a good draft class. It's just hard to get these guys on the field.
From the 253, Professor, who will return kicks and punts for the Seahawks this season?
I think it's going to be Tyler Lockett. I mean, that may be asking a little bit too much, but, you know, they'll certainly have, they won't have Rashad Penny back there in the first six games because he's going to be probably on PUP. But, no, I think overall that they're going to, you know, try to, you know, keep as it is because, you know, it's not like there's a lot of kickoff returns. And then secondly, you know, he's very safe with the punt returns.
From the 253, do you see the Seahawks having three Pro Bowlers in the secondary in 2020?
It could be tough because, I think two is probably more likely. I mean, you figure it's going to be a good shot for Jamal Adams. You look at the cornerback spot, and the NFC has a lot of good cornerbacks, you know, with Marcus Lattimore and all that stuff. And so, you know, to get that top three spot, and then what's going to hurt and probably, you know, prevent that even being maybe two or so is the fact that I don't think there's going to be a Pro Bowl. And one of the reasons that you get the Pro Bowl alternates getting a chance to get in is because, you know, you have maybe 40-some guys that elect not to go. And or they're going to be in the Super Bowl. So I think it's going to be, but still, they've got four quality Pro Bowl caliber guys. Maybe two of them can get in.
All right, John, the Husky fan in me is really hoping for a good news answer here. From the 425, week one, is Ben Burkervin on Seattle's roster?
Yes, he is. Because, you know, right now they've got so many outside guys. And, you know, I know that, they can take Jordan Brooks and he can play some inside stuff and all that. But, no, it's like Ben Burkervin's more the inside guy. And so, no, I think he makes the team. You know, special teams obviously being one of the keys. So I think he's fine.
From the 425, could Seattle use Trey Flowers as a trading piece in the future?
I don't think they would, but they could. I mean, if there's enough value there, but they could do that because right now the one issue is going to be if you trade him, because remember you still have his rights for the next couple years at a very low price. If you trade him, you have your two other cornerbacks who are going to be up, Quentin Dunbar and Shaquille Griffin, and so that could be tough. So now I think right now, I mean, it would have to be a really good offer for a trade.
Runner 253, good morning, John. Do you think there will be fans in the stands for Seahawks games this year?
I do not. I don't know if you saw the story today, but the Washington football team announced that they're not going to allow fans in the stands. We already know that the Green Bay Packers having no fans in the stands for their first two home games. The two New York teams are not having fans in the stands. We know that Vegas is not going to have fans in the stands. I'd say right now the answer is going to be no.
From the 425, how many wide receivers does Seattle keep this year?
I think five. You know, last year was up to seven, but I think they keep five this year because I think they want to keep an extra linebacker. They want to make sure that they have 9 to 10 offensive linemen. They've got to probably have 10 guys in the secondary.
From the 253, John, worst team in the league this season?
I'd say right now Jacksonville. I think Cincinnati has a chance to still be bad. You know, Washington's going to be bad. I mean, it's unfortunate, but most of the teams that were bad last year stay bad this year.
From the 425, if Chris Carson stays healthy and rushes for over 1,000 yards, does Seattle use the franchise tag on him?
I think so. I mean, that'll be sad for him, but it's also sad for anybody else because the reality is, you know, if the salary cap's going to drop over $20 million, that means that there's probably going to be a 30-35% drop in what franchise numbers are going to go for. So now the choice is going to be, can you talk Carson into signing for like, you know, $6 to $7 million and then put the franchise tag on one of the cornerbacks? You know, that could be a possibility. But no, I think that, they'll want to keep him. Obviously, they can't negotiate until they see how he plays this year, see how he comes off the injury. But they could easily do it because I think right now you're going to see at least five running backs from the 2007 class get franchise tagged.
Okay, so going off of that from the 541, with Carson maybe testing free agency after this season, could you see Carlos Hyde as a long-term option?
No. I mean, he's going to be older, and that's not going to be the case. I mean, he's going to be a short-term option because, what is he, 28, 29 years old, and you want to kind of stay as young as you can at the running back position. So, no, I'd say right now, I mean, he can come back as a backup, and again, if he needs to play, he can play. But I think the idea is take care of your own. You know, take care of the two guys who are up who start. Carson and Shaquille Griffin.
From the 206, where will Justin Britt end up?
Hard to tell. I mean, right now, you got to see how things sort out at the beginning of these practices to see who's going to be in need of a center. Right now, there doesn't seem to be too much need for centers right now because most of the position is taken care of. But at some point, he'll get a physical and a chance to see what he can do.
From the 425, how many years do you think Brady has left?
Two. I think two, and that's it. I mean, he probably wants to go 3 and 4, but I think you wrap it up in the next 2 years because, he's got a new team. He's got a team that I think he's having fun with. I mean, he's now having more fun than he's probably had in the last couple of years because it can be pretty draining with Bill Belichick. But I'd say this year and then next year.
From the 253, could the Seahawks try L.J. Collier at defensive tackle?
On passing downs, yeah, they can because again, the five technique can move in and play defensive tackle. That's why they can do it with Rasheen Green, and they can do it certainly with Brandon Jackson because they've done that in the past. So, yeah, I mean, you know, when he's not on a passing down, he can then move over and then try to see what he can do at the defensive tackle spot.
Yeah, he got a lot of comps to Michael Bennett when he got drafted,
yeah,
didn't he? Yeah.
He did.
Last question here, John, from the 425. What kind of season do you expect from Aaron Rodgers and the Packers this year?
I think Aaron's going to do – he's not going to pass as much because they're going to be more of a running team, and I think that there's a chance that that team can drop a little bit. You know, they're not real good stopping the run. They didn't add anything at the wide receiver position. They're starting to get some brewing questions on the offensive line. So, I mean, they're not going to win 13. I think they can win 10, and I think Aaron's numbers will start to come down a little bit because he's not going to have as much opportunity to pass.
All right, that's all the time we got for text.
All right, so coming up, I've got our Daily Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It is time for our Daily Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. So the balls have dropped in the last couple days. Pac-12 says goodbye to 2020. The Big Ten says goodbye. The one that was on the borderline was last night, and the Big 12 decided that they're going to press on. And so you got the ACC, you've got the SEC. So what a mess is college football. No leadership, but looks like they're going to try to play football.
Well, we'll see, but no leadership is the story there, John. It's a sad state of affairs when you don't have any coordinated policy, and they don't. And we'll see. September the 26th is when those teams are planning on starting to play. We'll see if it winds up happening that way. But as we talked about last week, the NCAA is loud with their absence in this. Meantime, though, we've got some hockey playoffs going on, John. Now, have you ever seen a five overtime game?
No. Well, it's only happened four times in that. I mean, last night was the fourth time it's happened in NHL history.
Unbelievable, and which means they had to start a game this morning at 9 a.m., which, by the way, is entering its second overtime. But hockey playoffs are going, and it's been a fun watch so far. But, you know, five overtime games, pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, that was just remarkable to see, you know, because what, there was like 260-some shots on goal. I mean, you have goalies taking 130 shots on them. I mean, that's amazing. I guess, I don't know, is this tipping off right now that this version of the NHL, you know, in the bubble is going to have a lot of low-scoring defensive-type games?
Good question. I mean, they had their play-in round, and there were plenty of goals scored. It's hard to read, but, you know, if playoff hockey is any indication, that's usually the case. A hot goaltender. I mean, it's the one thing about hockey. There is probably in team sports the you can argue that there's no more valuable player than a goalie in hockey, because everyone can have a bad game. Everyone can have a bad game on your offense, on your defensive lineman. Everyone can play bad. If your goalie plays well, doesn't allow any shots in, you can't lose. I mean, I can't think of another circumstance like that where one guy can have such control. And you know, you had it last night with those guys, and you saw a great overtime period if you were watching this morning between Boston and Carolina. So it tends to be that way when it comes to playoff time. And even though they don't have fans and they're in the bubble and they had to play a game when usually beer leaguers are playing, it got started last night. It's going to be a fun ride. And I imagine for a lot of Seattle fans, a chance to kind of tune in and get the feel of what it's going to be like when the Kraken start playing next year.
Oh yeah, no, it's great stuff. And you know, that's the one thing is, like, as good as it is watching hockey on TV, which is really maybe one of the toughest sports to watch on TV.
True.
It's so much better in the stands. I mean, it's so noticeably different.
It's funny. It's one of those games that once you go to it, you realize that, and then you can watch it differently on television. And you know, it's a very true statement, though, where some games are perfect for TV. Hockey isn't quite that. It is much better in person, but it gives you a different perspective on watching it in person. So you got those playoffs underway. You got baseball still continuing, although what a knuckleheaded move by those Indians yesterday.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about going the two pitchers going out.
Clevenger and yeah. Plesac. Yeah,
crazy.
Going out in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. It's awful.
Well, it's. I mean, I tell you, it's the challenge. I don't know. Did you see Hard Knocks last night?
I didn't get a chance to watch it. I'm gonna have to. I went to sleep earlier, so.
Don't blame you. Don't blame you. It was terrific though, and it was a real insight into what's going into the planning for dealing with the pandemic. It's, you know, the first, one of my first takeaways from it was, I can't imagine colleges would have the money, maybe some would, like Alabama and whatnot, to possibly prepare the way the NFL teams are prepared. They're doing two teams, they're doing the Chargers and the Rams, and they showed them both with all the stuff they're doing in regard to the pandemic. It's unbelievable. It's voluminous. It's so many things that you're looking at distancing and not just masks, but you know, you got to deal with meetings differently and all that. It was fascinating. And then, they showed, the ubiquitous Zoom meetings and the backdrop too of the racial upheaval and the Chargers in particular dealt with it head on. But, Anthony Lynn got COVID-19. So he talked about that. It was an amazing piece of insight into what training camps are like for the NFL teams, how different it is and how much thought goes into or is going into just trying to cover every single detail. And you think about those players with the Indians who just bailed out on their team. I mean, it's going to be a real challenge keeping those guys in. It really is.
Oh, no doubt. But I give credit to HBO and also, I mean, the NFL films, because, this is one where there wasn't action, but they did a great job of storytelling, Lynn's story. I mean, it looked like, they made sure that they had drama going with it.
Absolutely. They even had, I think it's one of the first times they had, I forget the name of the player, a tight end with the Chargers, I believe it was with the Chargers, who just blew up when he was cut because they had their first cut. So they did have a little bit of the normal stuff you saw, but it was really sobering to see all the things that they showed. They showed how the testing is going and all of that and all the things they're doing to try and keep it safe. You're right. HBO always does a great job. NFL Films always does a great job. And the access was spectacular. And everyone knows and likes Hard Knocks anyways. I think with the challenges they had, they took it to another level with episode one last night.
Yeah, no surprise. They really do such a great job of that. And, that's great to see because, again, I'm looking forward to watching the tape. And, of course, I know the one thing that you're going to be doing this afternoon in an hour and 8 minutes is turning on the Seahawk practice.
I probably will, John.
Yeah, because it's going to be on 13 at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, I mean, it's, just to see it going on, as much as I'm enjoying the playoffs. Yeah, I mean, it's to have that kind of access is going to be unique. And, I don't figure to be getting out there for the first time in I don't know how many years. I will probably watch a little bit and hope that it goes well for the Seahawks. And, you'll get an idea of what it looks like out there. It looks different and it's unique. So it's nice of them to provide that kind of access, too.
Oh, yeah. No, it's going to be fun. So that's going to be on the agenda, trying to see. And, of course, seeing this is the first time, again, talking about how everything has been ramped down. I mean, this is the first time now that the quarterbacks are allowed on a practice field to throw to the wide receivers.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, watching last night, you got an indication of just how different it is. The challenge it's going to be for teams to be, especially, if we talked about it, but especially if you're trying to put rookies in there. It's just, just knowing what training camp is normally like, knowing that if a guy misses a day or two, how devastating it is. I mean, it's just completely different. I mean, the learning curve for rookies, and you talked about, the fact that there's less practice, less everything, is going to make it demonstrably difficult, I would imagine, for any rookie in any circumstance to have a big impact this year.
But, of course, I mean, you've got a team like New England now with all their losses, particularly with the 8 opt-outs and the fact they've lost their top 4 linebackers, 2 of their top 3 safeties, their right tackle. They've wiped out all but one tight end, that their top 6 draft choices may all have to contribute and contribute a lot.
Well, we talked about Belichick being the one guy who could maybe handle it. We'll see. But again, my eyes were opened by watching the HBO special last night. It seems to me it's going to be very, very difficult to have those guys be a big factor for him. But we'll see. If anyone can pull it off, he can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's the one thing. It's like, if you're going to be a quarterback making the adjustment, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for all rookies, but hey, you got to make the best of the bad situation. I know back in 2011, one of the best players turned out to be Cam Newton, who didn't have an offseason program. I mean, he came in and, put up good numbers and, started to turn that franchise around.
It can happen. You're right about that.
And, of course, it happens every day. We get our daily dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. David, have yourself a good day and enjoy watching practice.
John, we'll talk tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good. And then we'll be back tomorrow. DJ Wilder, thank you for filling in for Curtis Rogers. We'll do it again tomorrow at 10. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.